Okay, let's get started, everybody. A good Yore to you all, and a thank you to Shiri and Daniel for the kind hospitality and use of their home. And thank you all for making the trip, those of you who have come from far. And thank you to those who have come from near. Lovely opportunity to get together and spend a few minutes together. One of the interesting things, have you ever thought about it in davening, where we say every morning, Avinu ha'avo rachamim rachim rachim aleinu, v'sein b'libeinu, put into our hearts, lahovin, to understand the Torah, ulah haskil, and to be intelligent about our understanding of the Torah, lishmaya, to hear it, to understand its depth, lilmoed, to learn it, lalamed, to teach it, and then at the very end, lishmo v'laso silakaya. If Naseh v'nishma was such a wonderful thing, what the Rebbe Nishim says, Mi gilo lebonai razeh shemalochei ha'amshoresh mishtamishim bo, this unbelievable understanding of Naseh comes before Nishma, that first you do and then you learn. That's such an amazing thing, and that's how we were mekabel the Torah. Why don't we start off and say, Lishmo v'laso silakayim, and then, lahavinu lahaskil lishma l'umud l'alamed. If the right order is, either way, which is the right order? Is the right order that Naseh comes before Nishma, or Nishma comes before Naseh? If Naseh comes before Nishma, then why do we do it in the wrong order in the davening? Any ideas on that? Anybody ever thought of that?
When we say Naseh, we make the commitment to do.
So yet we should follow that same order, that same commitment. Let us do.
What's doing is lasof, but making a commitment and doing is
so. Nasa Vinishma is just a commitment, it's not a process. We commit to doing what then? What are we committing to do?
We'll do everything which Krishna will tell us.
And it's not about order. There's nothing about the order. So then we could have just said Nishma Vanisa just as much. We commit to both.
No.
What's the raz? What's the secret?
No,
what is the secret?
You make a commitment.
But the Malach HaShoris is not about commitment. What the raz, when the Rebbe Nishim says this raz, that Malach HaShoris mishtam shimbo, the raz is the sequence. And the Gemara says that the sequence is the pre comes first. Normally the pre comes afterwards. If the action is the pre of the learning, then the learning should come first. This idea that the pre, that the fruit of the action is up front, that's something very unique and that's something very amazing. Where do they get it from? And yet we don't seem to function that way. So that's the one thing that I'm interested in exploring. The other thing is the question Tosfos asks in Gemara Shabbos, which is just the contradiction in the Gemara itself there with the two stories, Naseh v'Nishma. On the one hand, I'm so happy, we accepted it the way the Malachim accepted, and then Vayisyatzu b'tachti sahar, we stood at the bottom of the mountain. Says the Gemara, it means under the mountain, proper, not just at the bottom. Tachas sahar means we stood under the mountain because the Rishonim, so to say, held the mountain over us and said to us, im tekablu mutav, if you'll accept the Torah, that's fine, and if not, sham tehei kvuroschem, there you will be buried. So where's the Naseh v'Nishma? Manoshev asks Tosfos, either way, did we accept it voluntarily and say Naseh v'Nishma, or did we have to be forced into it? And how do you reconcile those two chazals? The third question for this evening is that the Loshon of the Gemara, Sham Tehei Kvuroschem, isn't that grammatically incorrect? Hashem holds the mountain over them and says, if you accept the Torah, well and good, and if not, Sham Tehei Kvuroschem. What should it say? Poh Tehei Kvuroschem. You'll be buried right here. Where's Sham? Where? Where's the Sham? Some other place? Why? And what's the nature of that place? So that's not altogether clear. And the last question is a question that Rebbe Elia used to ask about the name Chag HaShavuos. And he used to say that Chag HaShavuos is, all the other Yom Tovs are named after what we do on the day. Chag HaSukkos because we sit in a sukkah. Chag HaMatzah is because we eat matzah. Chag HaShavuos, the Shavuos are finished. The 7 weeks are over. Why are we calling the Yom Tov out of something that's already taken place? What happens on Shavuos is not Shavuos. What happens on Shavuos is Matan Torah. So it doesn't fit in with the other two of the Sholosh Regalim, the way we term it, particularly in the davening. It's like the terminology doesn't fit with the way we name Yom Tovim. So those are some of the things we're going to have a look at very briefly. And we'll start off with the answer to Tosfos's kasha. Tosfos gives his own answer, but the Medrash Tanchuma has a different answer on the question of how you reconcile Naaseh v'Nishma with Kofa Aleihem Harika Giga. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, Naaseh v'Nishma was Torah Shebichtav, and Kofa Aleihem Harika Giga was Torah Shebaal Peh. We were very quick to accept the written Torah, the Torah Shebichtav. We accepted voluntarily and very quickly. Torah Shebaal Peh, we weren't willing to take. Gemara, Mishnah, Gemara, everything that goes with it, that we weren't willing to take. He had to force us on that. Which is quite interesting, because if you look at it, all branches of Judaism accept the Chumash. Conservative, Reform, Orthodox, Reconstruction, they all like the Bible. So do the Goyim. There's nothing distinguishing about the Bible. Everybody likes the Bible. It's like chicken soup. It doesn't do anybody any harm. It's a beautiful book. Wonderful stories, some lovely moral and ethical principles in it. And yeah, it's got some archaic rituals and practices which you can choose to do or not do. But who has a problem with the Bible? So this that we're often talked about as the people of the book, we'll see tonight, we are not the people of the book at all. Everybody's the people of the book. Everybody loves the Chumash. They even made a New Testament of it. The Old Testament wasn't enough. The Chumash is easy. There's no limit in the willingness of civilization to acknowledge the beauty of the Bible. Torah Shebaal Peh, not only doesn't the rest of it, also that Reform doesn't accept, and conservative kind of accepts in part, but not altogether, and other religions don't have it altogether. It's one of the real differentiating factors. And we didn't accept it. We didn't accept it voluntarily. Torah Shebaal Peh, we didn't accept. Because Torah Shebaal Peh is what really differentiates us, and we'll understand how. One of the ways that we were forced into accepting the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Gemara says in the Dorim that Moshe Rabbeinu was mashbias. He made us take a shavua. We had to take an oath. We didn't have to for the Naaseh v'Nishma. That was voluntarily. We declared, we accepted, we embraced. But he had to be mashbias. That was the forcing that took place was in the shvua, and we're mushboim v'omdim. That is why we say ein shvua chalal shvua. So, for example, if a person makes a shvua, he takes an oath, makes a vow, and says, "I won't eat treif." That shvua doesn't have any effect. It's as if it isn't made, because ein shvua chalal shvua, ein isur chalal isur. You've already taken that oath. Once you've taken an oath, you make another oath on top of that. The second oath is null and void. It's irrelevant. So we are held by oath to the mitzvahs of the Torah. What is the nature of shvua? So I want to explore that a little bit, and then we'll understand some of the differences between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Because what emerges from this Tanchuma is, not only are they two different bodies of information, two different bodies of Torah and of law, but the way we relate to it is different, the way we received it is different, the way it came to us is completely different. So they are different at their very core in our interface with it. Not only is the material different, but the dynamic between us and the Torah is completely different for Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law and the written law. So what is the nature of the shvua? The idea of a shvua, thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks very much. That's good. The idea of a shvua, that it's a fascinating idea because it has a lot of halachic implications. It's also a very Kabbalistic idea, the idea of a shvua. And the Rabbeinu Bechaya talks a lot about shvua coming from the number 7, shvua and sheva being related. And the number 7 is a very important number, as you know. But what's really important about the number 7 is we see the material world in 6 dimensions, not in 3 dimensions. So if you think of it as a cube, we see the world as a cube, not just as, you know, height, length, and width. We see it as a cube that has 6 sides. So you've got each side of it, and the top and the bottom. You think of it as a box with 6 sides. And the 7th dimension is the content. So that's how we view reality. In Kabbalah, we look at reality as a six-sided cube with content being the seventh dimension. And that's why Shiva is so important. Whenever the word, the idea of Sheva comes in, that's why Sheva is nature, and Sheva is science, and Sheva is physical reality, and Sheva is materialism, because that's how this world operates in that framework of seven, being the six dimensions of reality, of space, and the content within that space. And what's important about the content is the same, irrespective of which facet you're looking at it from. So you could have a very big cube, a very big box, thousands of miles in length, breadth, and height. And you could imagine that what you would experience in different parts of it would be different. One part of the cube could be in South America, and one part of the cube could be in Russia. And you're experiencing very different things, but the cube is filled with the same content. And the content is the seventh dimension. And the seventh dimension, these are where the spheres come from, by the way. They talk about 10 spheres, as you know. And the seven spheres are the seven spheres of material reality. That's the seven. Six that box you in, and the seventh, which is the content. And the seventh is Malchus. The seventh is the Shekhinah, is the Ribono Shel Olam himself, so to say. Or to use the terminology that's used often in Kabbalah, it's the Koach. It's the energy that energizes the six. So now if you look at reality from a Kabbalistic perspective, it is six dimensions of physical reality, and the seventh, which is the energy that keeps it going, that holds it all together. But the energy, that koach, is the koach that comes from the Ribono Shel Olam, whether you call it Malchus or Shekhinah, whatever you want to call it. It's the power of the Ribono Shel Olam that holds it together, and that's a single koach. So even though you have six different facets, and you can look at the world from six different directions and dimensions, and many more, as we'll see, at the end, there's one principle inside it. And that idea of Shiva is very important in Matan Torah, because we find mentioned several times that the voice of Hashem was heard initially by Klal Yisrael, other than by Moshe Rabbeinu, just as a sound. And that sound broke up into seven kolos. And the word kol appears seven times in Matan Torah, both in Shmos and again in Dvorim. And you've got it in Tehillim, the seven kolos come up. So the one kol of the Ribono Shel Olam breaks up into those seven, the core and the six that go into different directions, and each of them break up into another 10, which leads to the 70 languages. So each nation was able to hear Matan Torah in its own language, hearing only one dimension, 1/70th. Whereas the voice, the actual sound, that was the content, that was the essence of it. And we find in Matan Torah a lot of reference to paradox. And the Medrash is very explicit with a few examples how paradoxical the Torah is. It says the Ribono Shel Olam does everything at one time. Hakol bevas achas. That's from the words at the beginning of the Aseres HaDibur. It says, Kol HaDvorim HaEle Lemor. Hashem said all these different things, Lemor, in one statement. Meim Yisu Mechaya Bevasachas. He kills and he gives birth at the same time. Makev Eroife Bevasachas. He brings disease and healing at the same time. And it goes on. The Mayim and Yaboshe, and Yaboshe and Mayim. The snake turns to a stick, the stick turns to a snake. And even when you come into Zohar and Shomer was with one Dibur, and the halachas of Shabbos on the one hand, and yet you can bring a korban on the other hand. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to cook, but you can bring a korban. Those are two contradictory things. Erva's Eishes Achich Alo Yisagale, there's an Isur of Eishes Ach, you can't marry the wife of your brother, but then Ki Yeshu Achim Yachdav, there's the din of Yibum. They're paradoxes, they're opposites. The Torah is full of opposites. V'chulan Amoron Bevas Achas. And they were all said at once. So what we need to appreciate here is when you're dealing with the content, it's only one. When it breaks up into its applications, you're going to find contradiction. Because those applications can go very far from the source. And they need to go far from the source. So when you're dealing with applications, when you're dealing with the practicality of halacha, or you're dealing with the practicality of a philosophic idea, or you're dealing with the practicality of an ethical idea, you will find opposites, you will find paradoxes, and the way to resolve them is to get to that core, to be able to get to the content. When you're dealing with content, You get to the oneness that explains the paradox. That's the whole idea of Shnei Ksuvim Hamachishim Zeh. When you learn the Torah, you will constantly find psukim that are opposite to one another. Ad Shiyovo Akosav Ashlishi, you've got to find the third one. If there's a paradox, you're missing the third one. And the third one is the content that keeps it all together. And what's that got to do with Shavuah, apart from the idea of one content moving around to six different dimensions? The idea of Shavuah is the same, because how does a Shavuah work? A person says, I will not have benefit from peaches and apples and meat. How many Shavuahs is that? It's really one Shavuah. There's the concept of Isur. The concept of Shavuah is one Shavuah, there's one Isur. I've applied that to different products. I've applied that to different objects. That's the idea of a Shavuah. And so the Chazal tell us that in Torah, although you've got all these different halachas, that at the end of the day, it works like a Shavuah. There's one core driver that is behind every single halacha. Each one is not a world on its own. Every single halacha is simply a facet of the content of Torah. Just as you can have one Shavuah that manifests in many Isurim, so with the Torah you've got one Matan Torah which manifests in a multitude of halachas. That's the idea of Shavuah. But I want to take it just a little bit further, because in understanding the aspect of Shavuah in Torah, that the giving of Torah is actually an oath in that sense, there is one kind of Shavuah that is very unique. And that Shavuah is so unique that there's a machlokes and a lot of confusion in the Rishonim and early Achronim as to whether it's a Shavuah at all. And that is the Shavuah of Nazirus. A person takes upon himself to be a Nazir, to be a Nazirite. And there's a machlokes as to whether that's a Shavuah or that's a Neder. So the Ashbol says in Shuvas it's a Neder, and proves it from Gemara's in the beginning of the Dorim. And the Ritva says in Masech Teshuvos, it's a Shavuah, it's not an Eder. What's the difference between a Shavuah and an Eder? There's a very big difference. They're both Isurim, they both are the human creation of Isurim, the human creation of prohibitions, but they work differently. So if I want to prohibit myself from this glass of water, there are two ways I can do it. I can put a barrier between myself and the water and say I'm not willing to cross that barrier, or I can turn the water into treif. But the magical ability to turn the water into treif, that's what an Eder can do. So I can, the way that the halachic language is used is whether it's an isur gavro or an isur chefza. What changes? What imposes the restrictions? Am I affected as the human being, or is the object affected? In the case of shvuah, I'm affected. I say, I will not have benefit from that water. That's a shvuah. So the water's the same. You want to put the water under a halachic microscope, you'll notice no change in it. All that I've done is, I've taken upon myself not to have benefit from something which would otherwise be mutter, which would otherwise be permitted. A neder is different. A neder, I don't change. I'm exactly the same. I just convert the water into a davar osu. I work to convert the water into something that's osu, into something that's treif for me. But that the working of the mechanism is on the object, not on the subject. And there are many ramifications and outcomes of those differences. So the question the Rishonim ask is, what is a nazir? How does it work? Does the nazir make the wine treif? Because there are three things that apply to a nazir. He can't drink anything that comes from Geffen. He can't eat anything that comes from Geffen. He can't go to Tumas Hames. He's got to act like a kohen in that sense. He's got to restrict himself from any Tumas Hames. And Tiglachas, he can't cut his hair, he can't shave. Those are the three things. So what happens? Is that an Isur Gavra? Does he say, I won't do those three things? Or does he say those three things convert into Isur for me, and the outcome of that is therefore I'm a Nazir? What is the process? What is the mechanism? And the Ritva, most of the Shonim go along the line that it is a Shavuah. It's an Isur Gavra. Because he doesn't specifically say anything about the wine. When he takes on Nazirus, he doesn't mention wine. When he takes on Nazirus, he doesn't mention shaving, and he doesn't mention Tumas Hames. All he says is, from tomorrow I'm going to be a Nazir, is what he says. So where's the change? Is the change in the individual, or is the change in the object? He's talking about the subject, he's not talking about the object. And so the Ritva holds that a Nazir is a Shavuah. But here's the twist, and here's where it links into Matan Torah. It's a Shavuah that changes the individual. So he's no longer an ordinary human being, he's a Nozer. Now what happens? So now it's quite interesting, because as you move up in the spiritual world, things that cause no damage to ordinary people begin to cause damage to you. So if you think of it, for example, if you think of a butcher's scale, I mean, you go into to where they sell meat and you've got these big scales and they throw a half a cow onto the scale and they weigh it. That's an instrument, it's a mechanical instrument that measures weight. If you kick it or you're rough with it, it's not going to damage the scale a whole lot. It's built for that. And now you walk into the laboratory of a chemist. And he's got one of these very precise scales that can measure to 1/1,000,000th of a gram. And it's in a special case, because a slight change in temperature can mess up the whole reading. It's also a scale, but you can't kick it around. They're both scales. But what damages one scale doesn't damage the other scale, because the one is just the tuning of the one is just far more fine than the tuning of another. And human beings are instruments just the same. We're instruments that generate energy. We're instruments that receive energy. We're instruments that can deal with Kedusha. We're very complex instruments. And some of us can be damaged by something very minor, and some of us can't even be damaged by major differences. So when a person is a Jew, there are things that damage him that don't damage a non-Jew. They're just not damaged by those things. So a non-Jew can eat treif and isn't damaged by it. It doesn't affect his soul. We eat treif, it affects us. A Kohen is damaged by things that a Yisrael is not damaged by. And a Nozir is damaged by things that an ordinary person isn't damaged by. So a Nozir has elevated himself to a level of Kedusha such that these minute things which we wouldn't detect at all as being problematic, his delicate soul in that state of being a Nozir is impacted by those things. So he drinks wine and it messes with his Nazirus. He comes near a mace, it messes with his Nazirus. We come near a mace or we drink wine, it doesn't do anything to us. Because there's been a change in the Gavra. That's what Neder does. Neder changes the person. Neder changes an object. Usually it changes the object outside of one. The peculiarity of Nazirus is it works like a shvur, because the words you utter don't affect the object. The words the Nozir utter isn't what makes the wine treif. The words the Nozir utter makes him a different person. And the result of that is he's got to keep away from certain activities which ordinary people can engage in. That's the shvur that Matan Torah was about. When we came to Matan Torah wasn't about a shvua of we undertake to keep the mitzvahs, we undertake not to eat treif, we undertake to keep Shabbos. That's not what it was about. It was a shvua like Nazirus. We undertake to become Jews. We undertake to become Bnei Yisrael. We undertake to become an Am Yisrael governed by the Torah. That's what we undertook. That changed who we were. The consequence of that is now you're this kind of person, you can't do a whole lot of stuff, it's going to damage you. Because you changed, not because it's changed. That's the Shavuah of Matan Torah. And now we can understand why Shavuos is called Shavuos, because when did we change? When did this change happen? It took 48 days, 49 days. That's what we've been doing for 49 days, changing. We were down in the 49 stages of Tumah, and we took 7 weeks to change. Shavuos is the culmination of 7 weeks of change. That's what Shavuos is. The Torah is the natural outcome. Once you've gone through that change process, you can't do the things you used to do. It's like becoming an Ozir. That's what happens. It took us 7 weeks to transform ourselves into people who were able to be mekabel the Torah. So then let's go through the process. Then we say Na'aseh v'nishma. That's the natural reaction. Completely natural for us to say Na'aseh v'nishma once we had gone through that change. It was a little bit of a trick question. Rishon takes us through 7 weeks of transformation and then says, do you want the Torah? By that time, we can't live without the Torah, because that's who we are. We've developed ourselves into kelim, into receptacles that cannot function without Torah. So we say, absolutely, Na'aseh v'nisha, we don't care what's in the Torah. We can't live without this Torah. So we've got it. What is with the Torah Shebaal Peh? How was the Torah Shebaal Peh forced upon us? What is the nature of that Kafa Lehemaki? It doesn't mean clearly that. Didn't hold the mountain over us. What did he do? The Tur says, in the Birkas HaTorah that we say in the morning, that Asher Nosan Lono Toras Emes, is Torah Shebichtav, V'chaye Oilom Not HaBesochenu, is Torah Shebaal Peh. So let's understand the implications of that. That means in that bracha there are two different ways of receiving Torah. One is Nosan Lono, he gave something to us. And then there's Nota B'Sechen. He implanted something in us. Well, what did he do? Did he give it to us or did he implant it? Says the two. One is Torah Shebichtav, one is Torah Shebaal Peh. So Torah Shebichtav, he gave us. He said, do you want it? We said, yes. Gave it to us. It was a handover. It was a transaction. But Torah Shebaal Peh was Nota B'Sechen. Torah Shebaal Peh, he implanted in us. So what does that mean? If it's implanted in us, we're rewired. That's really what happens. During the 7 weeks, we became rewired. We had implanted in us a way of operating. It's an operating system different from a goy. And it's an operating system aligned with Torah Shebaal Peh. So what's our choice now? So now it's almost like a heartbeat. You've got the heart. It's an involuntary muscle activity. You don't will your heartbeat, you don't turn it on and off, you don't decide when to, it's involuntary, it's there all the time. Torah Shebaal Peh is involuntary. What happens if you choose, or if you insist on becoming voluntary about your involuntary muscle movements? You decide, I will let my heart beat when I choose to let it beat. What happens? Sham tehek v'roschem, at that point you die. That's what happens. That's what sham tehek v'roschem means. At the moment you decide to turn off something I've implanted in you, you can't exist as a Jew. And Sham Teik V'roschem, if as a nation that happens, Chas V'Sholom, the nation will die. And if as an individual that happens, your Jewishness will die. And die as a human being. Human beings can function without the Torah. A Jew can't function without the Torah. So V'chaye Olam Not HaBesochenu, that becomes something which is implanted in us. So now we have a different understanding. Torah Shebichtav, that's the Torah remains something outside of us. Torah Shebichtav never really becomes part of us. Torah Shebichtav is a book. And it's a wonderful book, and it's a complex book, and in it are the roots of everything, that all the ideas that there are in the world that we need to know. It's a book that the wisdom of which buried deep in it is infinite. But what we have within us is the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's the part that we have within us, that's implanted in us. That's the transformational piece. Torah Shebichtav is not transformational. You can read the Bible and read the Bible and read the Bible. It's not transformational. It's beautiful, it's wonderful. You can practice it or not practice it. You can practice it sometimes and not other times. It's not transformational. Torah Shebaal Peh is transformational. If we're learning Torah Shebaal Peh properly. Unfortunately, very often we treat Torah Shebaal Peh with the same methodology that we used for Torah Shebichtav. And we don't always understand that the process has to be different. What does Torah Shebaal Peh mean? It means absorption. It means, or take the brocha, it's implanted in us. What does that mean? There's a natia inside us. There's a little sapling inside us. What do you do with the sapling? You nurture it. You water it. You take care of it. You tend it. It has to grow inside you. It's not the acceptance of something outside. So Torah Shebaal Peh you can never master. Torah Shebichtav you can master. You can know Torah Shebichtav Baal Peh. But Torah Shebaal Peh, even if you know it Baal Peh, even if you know the Torah, the whole of Shas by heart, you haven't mastered it. That's not mastery. You can't master Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh can master you. You can be mastered by Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a completely different process. Torah Shebaal Peh I've often compared to the mitzvah of Sukkah, the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of Mikveh. I don't know what other mitzvahs are like that. Mitzvahs you've got to get into. You don't stand outside. It's not like a lulav. You hold the lulav in your hand and you do something with it. Hold an esrog in your hand. You put tefillin on. That's not what Torah Shebaal Peh is. Torah Shebichtav is that. And that's why they're dinim of a Sefer Torah. How you deal with a Sefer Torah. How you hold it. How you sit with it. How you take it out. Where you put it. How you open it. How you close it. How you write it. All sorts of dinim about the object. There are no such dinim about the Torah Shebaal Peh. How you handle it, how you do it, is nothing. Because you don't handle it. You don't master it. It masters you. You get into it. You've got to immerse yourself. You've got to move into it. It's something that contains you. You don't contain it. And when it contains you, you are transformed. That's what the Chaye Olam Nota B'Sechenu, that transformation that takes place when we learn Torah Shebaal Peh makes us different people. And that's the part that takes place. And that's why Hashem says, the Kof Ali HaKagir, it's implanted in you. You don't have a choice to say yes or no. It's you. Once you've gone through that 7-week transformation period, and you've said Naaseh V'Nishma on the Torah Shebichtav, at that point you don't have a choice anymore. You can't live without it. And that becomes incredibly important. And that's why Shavuos is a Yom Tov not for Torah Shebichtav. Simchas Torah is for Torah Shebichtav. Shavuos is for Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's why people stay up all night and learn. And they don't learn Chumash. That's the time to learn Gemara. It's the time to learn Torah Shebaal Peh. Simchas Torah is Torah Shebichtav. We're happy that we got the Torah and we finished reading the Torah. It's about Torah Shebichtav. Not Shavuos. Shavuos is Torah Shebaal Peh. That's why the Gemara says there's a beautiful Gemara in Psochim, where Rav Yosef used to have a special party on Shavuos. And it brings many Tanoim and Amiroim who used to not overdo the eating on Yom Tov, except Shavuos. And some used to say Purim, special chiyuv to have a party, Erev Yom Kippur, special chiyuv to eat, and Shavuos. And Shavuos, Rav Yosef says, the reason I have the special party, and he used to order all these delicacies, is he says, because if it weren't for the Torah, there would be hundreds of Yosefs like me in the marketplace. The Torah is what differentiates me. And we need to understand that to really understand what Torah Shebaal Peh is. And Rashi says over there, because through the Torah Nisroi Mamti, I have been elevated through the Torah. So what Torah does, what Torah Shebaal Peh does, is it changes you. It's not about what you do to the Torah, it's about what the Torah does to you, the ability of the Torah to be Meroimim. But what's really interesting with that piece of Rav Yosef is Rav Yosef says, that's what makes me unique. That's what gives me a different way of looking at the world. And different from whom? Does he mean different from the Goyim? When he says, if it weren't for the Torah, there would be many Yosefs out there. Who's he comparing himself to? Even other Talmidei Chachomim are different, because that's what Torah Shebaal Peh gives you. It alerts your innovativeness. It gets down to the essence of what makes you different. Each person understands it in a different way. Each person has a different insight into Torah Shebaal Peh. That's why it's so rich. And that's why it's so important. So when we talk about Shavuos and what Matan Torah is, we've got it classified in two different spaces. Torah Shebichtav, very nice. That's universal. Everybody benefits from the Torah Shebichtav. The written law is important, and it's the Chumash, the Bible, very important. Everybody gets the benefit from that. But Torah Shebaal Peh, Rav Yosef says, that's what makes me who I am. Without Torah Shebaal Peh, I would be like other Yosefs. Torah Shebaal Peh enables a person to touch the very core of their own differentiation and to develop their uniqueness in a way that is different from anybody else and to bring a perspective to the world that nobody else has. That's the power of Torah Shebaal Peh. And so what do we need to do with all this? I think there are a few things that we need to do. The one is we need to make sure when we learn that that's how we're learning. So that's a good test. You've got to be able to ask yourself at the end of a piece of learning, no matter what it is that you're learning, if it's not Torah Shebichtav, if it's not just going through Chumash, if you're learning, if you're accessing Torah Shebaal Peh in any form, the thing that you've got to ask yourself is, in what way has this transformed me? And if this hasn't transformed me, I haven't got it yet. In what way am I different? In what way do I understand the world differently? In what way do I see the world differently? In what way are my relationships going to be different after this piece of learning? In what way is my Shmiras HaMitzvahs going to be different as a result of that? Because again, if we get back to the content and the six sides, the six dimensions of the cube, if you change the content, everything changes. And it doesn't matter what content you're dealing with. That's why the Medrash says all these different things, and you come with all these paradoxes and these opposites. It doesn't matter when you're dealing with content, if you're learning a Shosha Nogah HaSapora, or you're learning some Chumash and Rashi, or you're learning a piece of Kodshim, it doesn't make any difference. You're dealing with a content. If you're dealing at the content level, you're going to change all six sides of the box are going to change. Everything changes. And you get a different understanding in all of them. You're not confined when you're dealing with content, you're not confined to any one of the six dimensions. When you're dealing with content, you're dealing with all dimensions at the same time. And that's what's really important about it. So that's one of the things that when one's learning, one has to try and question oneself all the time. Am I getting to content? Am I getting to the shorish? Am I getting to the root of an idea that changes the way I see and understand every other idea? Or is this, or am I left the same? Am I left untouched as a person? The idea of Viroimamti, am I elevating myself? Am I becoming a greater human being? Am I becoming a finer? In what way is the Torah affecting me? These are the things we've got to try and work on. It's not just a matter of quantity, of going to another shir and learning another blood gemara and learning. That's not what it's about. It's in what way am I changing as a human being? In what way are my perspectives on the world changing? And then the last area is probably just the area of doing it the other way around and understanding how when you do change as a human being, there are lots of things that can cause change in a person. One of them is the Torah itself. But there are other things that cause changes in people. Struggle. You're going through a difficult time. You're dealing with something. These are things that stretch you. Anything that stretches you and changes you, when you're dealing at content level, it changes everything in your world. It doesn't just change one thing. And it's something one needs to look at all the time. In what way am I changing? In what way am I developing? In what way are the nisyonos or the challenges I'm dealing with, in what way are they growing me? So that I am able to be misroimem, to elevate myself to a point where I'm relating to the world in different ways. And that's something also that that I thought a lot about today, because today I had to keep Yom Tov. And I know that there are all sorts of days and views about second day Yom Tov for people from Chutz Laretz, but there are all sorts of views until you learn the sugya yourself. And when you learn the sugya yourself, they're not all sorts of views. It's very, very clear. And it's very clear because what determines how many days Yom Tov you keep is not where you are. What determines how many days Yom Tov is who you are. That's what determines it. There's some halachas, there's some minhagim that are dependent on where you are. There's some halachas that are dependent on where you are. Second day Yom Tov has got nothing to do with where you are. Second day Yom Tov has got to do with who you are. And a Ben Eretz Yisrael and a Ben Chutz Laretz are two different kinds of people. Just like a Nozir and a non-Nozir are two different kinds of people, a Kohen and a Yisrael, a Jew and a Goy, a Ben Eretz Yisrael and a Ben Chutz Laretz are two different human beings. And the halachas flow from that. Just as a Nozir, just as Matan Torah. What happened in Matan Torah? We changed. Once we changed, the halachas are inevitable. It's not a whole lot of sets of halachas. Once you're elevated, there are a whole lot of things in the world that you've got to do differently because they're damaging if you don't. Become a Nozir, things change. You become a Ben Eretz Yisrael, things change. But until you become a Ben Eretz Yisrael, and the halacha is quite clear on what it is that makes a person a Ben Eretz Yisrael, things don't change. It doesn't matter where you are. You're still a Ben Chutz Laretz. And so you who are fortunate to be living in Eretz Yisrael have to understand, as I'm sure you do, it's not just of where you live that you happen to live here. It's a different being, a different human being. Somebody who's made that commitment and is living in Eretz Yisrael, and particularly living in Eretz Yisrael properly and keeping the halachas of Eretz Yisrael properly, that's a different kind of human being. It's not the same human being. The reason that there are certain halachas that apply here that don't apply there and vice versa is because different human being. When you're here, you're a different human being, and that's a wonderful bracha, and one that you shouldn't take lightly. And part of the purpose of B'nai Chutz Laretz keeping second day Yom Tov is for them to understand that they're different people. It's like when you come as a foreigner to a country and you can't vote. They want you to know you're not one of us. You want to become one of us. There's a process, but right now you're not one of us. You're welcome as a guest, but you're not one of us. There's a difference. You're not a citizen. And second day Yom Tov is to make quite sure that the people who are not B'nai Eretz Yisrael don't think they are. Because it's important to know. If you don't know who you are, you'll never change. If you don't know who you're not, you'll never change. Very, very important for us to know that. So I thought of that a lot today and thought admiringly of all of you and the very many other people who also go through the struggles, as I'm sure there often are struggles of living in Israel, understanding just as a Nozir has struggles that an ordinary person doesn't have, a Jew has struggles that a Goy doesn't have, a Ben Eretz Yisrael has struggles that a Ben Chutz Laretz maybe doesn't have, but that means that it's a different quality of human being to whom different halachas apply and with which different bracha comes. So may you be blessed with that bracha and with that being of that different person. that different kind of being. And, you know, when you've got beings like that, like Jews as opposed to the rest of the world, and the Zirim or Kohanim, it's not just who they are, they also radiate a level of Kedusha. Part of why that's important is when an individual or a group of individuals elevates themselves, it's not just that they're on a different level, they actually radiate a level of Kedusha to everybody else. So it's important to know how dependent we all are on you. Not just because you provide a safe haven in case there's trouble overseas, that's one part of it. But much more important than that is the Kedusha that comes out of Eretz Yisrael, from the mitzvahs that you keep here and the Torah that you learn over here, is something that radiates over the entire world, and you should know that we feel it and we appreciate it. So, good show. Any questions or good comments on that?